Track 5, vocals. Track 3, piano.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, arch will see a world where men are free.
We swing it like that.
Someday at Christmas, we'll see a land with no hungry children, no windy ends. One happy morning, people will share a world where people care.
And welcome to the Cultcast, the jolliest 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Santa Claus. Yes, it's actually me, Santa. I'm a huge fan of the show, you know.
Oh, thanks, Santa.
Joining me today, I love going down his chimney because Santa knows a plate of cookies and a tall, stiff one is waiting for him. Leander Caney is here.
Hey, Santa Claus.
Also with me, he comes and sits on my lap every year at the mall. Oh, sorry, you asked me not to mention that. Anyway, Lewis Wallace is here.
Ah, jeez. Hey, we're almost there, aren't we?
Also with us, I've had my elves custom cut some extra short jean shorts just for him, and I can't wait to put them under the tree. Outside his van in the parking lot. Buster Heidi is here.
Hey.
And thank you, Santa. We have listeners all over the globe, some in the deep north, some in the south, some in the west. Did you know the Cultcast is enjoyed in over 200 countries? Did you guys even know that?
No.
That's not
that
possible.
Sounds yeah, suspect.
It's got to be a made up stat.
And there was one listener in the very deep North Pole, and I tracked down his IP address, and I figured out it was someone very special. I asked him to do that guest intro for us, and
wow.
He enthusiastically said, yes, sure. Oh, boy. Well, welcome to the Cultcast, the pre-Christmas episode. We have so much good stuff planned for you guys this week, and that should come as a surprise because this is surely probably the slowest news week of the entire year. I scoured the internet for interesting stories and I didn't find a single one, but I do have some mildly interesting stuff here.
Great show.
We're going to try to make it as interesting as possible. Here's what we got. We have a very special announcement about a very special announcement we're going to be making next week. Yes, we're not making the special announcement this week, but I want you to know a special announcement is coming next week. Also, this is an historic week in Apple history. This same week in 1994, Apple started allowing PC manufacturers to license their OS and building their own versions of the quote-unquote Mac. It was a total disaster. A very young, cool, hip Leander Caney was on the scene during that very time trying to make a name for himself. And he's going to tell us all about the, what are they called, the Clone Macs, the Clone Wars?
Yeah, the Mac clones.
You could call them the Clone Wars, actually, because the way the story turned out, there was kind of a war for Apple to get out of it. Plus, we are going to wrap up the show with our favorite movies of 2018. I went through IMDb, and I prepared big time this year. And you got to remember, this was the year of MoviePass. So I saw literally every movie like six times this year. So I actually have an extensive list of movies. Buster's here. He's at his public library. That's serious. That's not a joke. He's at his public library, and he's going to whisper all of his favorite movies of the year. And I'm glad to have Buster here because he's always got such great movie and television show picks. Okay, let's see here. Before we dive in, let me say thank you to Opsgenie for supporting this episode. Incidents happen, and they require complex coordination between operations and software development teams who are putting out fires every day. That's why getting alerts immediately is critical. Thankfully, there's Opsgenie by Atlassian. Opsgenie empowers dev and ops teams to plan for service disruptions and stay in control during incidents. It also gives teams the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues and helps to notify all the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that account for things like time zones and holidays. Better yet, Opsgenie allows for deep flexibility in how, when, and where alerts are deployed with over 200 integrations like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. Plus, it tracks all activity and provides useful insights to improve future incident responses. With Opsgenie, your next incident doesn't stand a chance. Visit Opsgenie.com to sign up to get a free company account and add up to 5 team members. That's Opsgenie.com. Never miss a critical alert again with Opsgenie. Also want to thank Squarespace for supporting this episode. It's almost 2019. And if I'm honest, I never thought I'd make it this far. With my wild ways when I was younger, my partying days, I was like, if I make it to 30, I'm going to be doing pretty good. It's 2019. Maybe you've grown up a little bit in the last year and you've decided, you know what? I need a new job. I need to get myself out there. I need to showcase my skill set. Maybe you are starting a new business, or maybe you have a business, but you still, much to your shame, do not have a website. If you visit squarespace.com/cultcast, you will have an opportunity to build a beautiful website so quickly. You'll be up on the web in no time at all. The entire thing is manageable by one person. It doesn't matter how technical you are or how untechnical you are. Squarespace's magic is their drag and drop interface. Everything is just drag and drop. You just bloop, 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 plop little elements in and move them all around. You can change fonts and colors, make the website look uniquely yours. And then if you're really hardcore, you want to dive into the CES or the CSS, you can do that too and absolutely change everything. Plus, they have world-class service. It makes running the website by yourself so easy. You don't need to have anyone help you, which is one of my favorite things about Squarespace. You can run the entire thing by yourself, add content, and even sell products and services of all kinds. Head on over to squarespace.com/cultcast to get started and use code cultcast at checkout, and you will get 10% off your first order at squarespace.com/cultcast and use the code cultcast at checkout when you are signing up for service to get a discount. Did we lose somebody?
It no, like stopped my recording, so I re-entered the room.
Buster.
Uh-huh.
Welcome back. Lewis just said there's only 195 countries in the world.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny, Lewis?
What's funny?
Is Cultcast is listened to in more than the available countries in the world.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a little bit.
That's how popular this show is. It's listened to on our world and others.
That could be the screenshot you use for the for the post. Yeah, geez.
You know what? You know what, Lewis? How dare you fact check me? You're fake news.
Next thing you know, we're going to be deplatforming you.
Yeah. If Tim Cook hears my claim, we're getting deplatformed for sure. Okay, very special announcement next week. I don't know how much information extra I can give because I kind of already gave it away. But I will say this. We have our 7-year anniversary coming up in February. And I've been trying to think of ideas. We wanted to do something special for 7 years. And Buster, was it you asking me, like, why is 7 years a big deal?
Yeah.
That was you. And I was saying, I feel like 7 years is the mark that cements your place in a specific area. You always hear about people who become overnight successes, and often those people have been doing whatever they were doing for at least 7 years, often seven to ten. Now, I will fully admit our show has actually probably gotten worse in the last 7 years, not better. But we've kept at it. And so to celebrate the occasion, we have we've come up with an idea, and we want to tell you about it next week. And And well, that's all I'll say about it right now. So special announcement coming up next week. Before we dive into today in Apple history, let's cruise through these other news items just real fast because I think they're at least worth mentioning. Lewis, can you tell us about the fateful demise of Apple Music Connect? First, maybe tell us even what it is because I literally forgotten. I had to go look this up.
That's what's, you know, like Apple Music Connect is dead. What? Is anybody shedding a tear over this? Is anybody even surprised? Anybody know it existed?
Chris Martin from Coldplay did. He was literally the only one I ever saw use this.
I think I got a couple of alerts from Iron Maiden a long time ago.
Iron Maiden?
Or Judas really? Priest or something. Yeah. I remember I saw something. It was just like, you know, I mean, that's why this is dead, right? It was useless.
Was it an attempt for Apple to, like, let artists reach out to their fans on Apple Music? Was that what it was?
Yeah, that's what it was. Are we literally going to talk about what it was? Yeah,
it was
a way that like you could go in there and say, hey, you know, we got a new single coming out today, you know, whatever. We're going to be on tour here, there, and everywhere. It was never that easy to find the stuff. I don't know. I guess it used
Apple
to be on
that.
What?
Well, why did they do that? I mean, a band has Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. They have every other, like,
exactly,
social platform to announce that type of stuff.
So right. How many band members are sitting around going, gee, I can't wait to spend a whole bunch of extra time generating content for yet another email or a social platform, you know? Especially one that exists behind a paywall, which, you know, I mean, let's just be honest. Apple Music, especially at the beginning, was, you know, didn't have that many people using it. It's getting much bigger, but... But then it's behind a paywall. It's buried. You know, people get into music because they like playing music, not because they like, you know, tweeting or posting garbage to Facebook or...
Like, I would say one thing Apple Music could do way better socially is instead of, like, focusing on bands trying to be social, like, user-to-user sociality. Like, on Spotify, like, so many of my friends, like, we all make different playlists and you can collab and... follow, and it's just way easy to find stuff on Apple Music. It's not focused towards that at all.
I think that's a good idea. That's an obvious thing to do, isn't it? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, add that social playlist so you can see what your friends are doing. That's one of my favorite features about Spotify. Actually, is just kind of seeing what people are doing, and it brings life to the app because if you sign on, you can just see that people are there listening to different music, and so it kind of creates. Even though I'm not interacting with these people in any way, and probably wouldn't want to. It does help. It creates a feeling of social togetherness. Like, we're all listening to music at the same time. Now we all have our headphones on and we're listening to different things and we're not talking to each other. But at least we're all here. That's what counts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The other day, or, you know, earlier today, I was looking at it. It's like, oh, yeah, here's the last thing that Leander listened to. I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting.
Oh, I bet it was real weird, wasn't it?
Oh, echoing the Bunnyman.
Sounds right.
Is that right?
Bingo.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I just wanted to see him in concert.
Oh, is that a real band? I thought you were joking. That's a real thing?
You've never heard of them?
Oh, my God.
Echoing the Bunnyman?
Who?
Quit. You haven't heard of him either, Buster? Quit echoing the Bunnyman. Quit essential.
Can't say that I have.
Band.
You guys are just too young.
Are they a British band?
A thing with 6ix9ine at all? Yeah. Or no? Do you know who 6ix9ine is, though?
Yeah, yeah, oh, I don't know. Yeah, he just kicked the bucket. I'm sorry, he just gone to jail.
Okay.
Oh, he's in jail now?
Yeah.
He's gone to jail or something.
Yeah.
God, I cannot hear Buster at all.
Yeah, Buster, you're pretty low. I don't know
he's
why.
There, but...
Am I here? Can you hear me?
No, I know you're here. It's just your audio is kind of low, but I'm hoping I can boost it in post because... Are you talking
closer?
Far from... Yeah, if you can get closer, that would probably help.
I'm way close.
Oh, dude, that made a big difference.
Okay, I'll be like right on it.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
Way to call it out, Lewis. I was just going to try and fix it in post, but...
The magic of radio.
Yeah, it helps. You want to get your face right up in front of that thing. Just let it dangle right in front of your face. Okay, so RIP Apple Music Connect. I thought part of the interesting commentary here was just the fact that Apple has tried social experiments twice now. And for whatever reason, Apple seems to not have the knack for building social experiences because people abandoned them right away. And with Apple Music Connect, literally none of the artists ever used it. I would go in there occasionally and just check. And I mean, I kid you not, Coldplay was the only band that ever posted anything. And no one else did. And I was just going to say about your commentary about what band did you say, Lewis, was using it?
I think it was Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden. The irony of Iron Maiden using Apple Music Connect to connect with their listeners. I mean, Iron Maiden has historically been this counterculture band, and now they're in Apple Music Connect using it to like send out band paraphernalia to connect with their user base on Apple Music. It's just so uncool for them to be
I hope I don't have that wrong. I mean, this was like when it first came out, I remember, you know, like bands that you like, bands that you follow, whatever. Yeah. And I remember seeing a few things. It felt so half-hearted. And you know, I mean, to be fair, if it was them or – I mean, it was definitely a big band like that I knew a long time ago that I still like. And definitely probably a band that has, you know, a marketing team, right? I mean, so that's who was – I would say – mostly doing this. I mean, everybody's connected in so many ways. They didn't need it. So, I guess Ping lasted 2 years. This one lasted like close to three or something.
It was three
that long?
Years.
Did you guys ever use Ping? I never used that. I don't even remember it.
I'm honestly not even sure I could tell you what it was. I mean,
it's always trotted out as like the thing that died and the predecessor, and this is, and the Kinect is the new Ping, and it's like, okay, now there's two things that are dead that I don't really even
understand.
See, they
were right. Kinect was the new Ping. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. I wanted to at least mention this story and get your guys' take on this, because I thought this was an unusual move for Apple, and they seem to be participating in some various unusual moves, marketing moves these days in an effort to sell products that seem to not be doing very well. And I'm thinking about the iPhone XR on their website. Like, you go there and it shows like that message about how you can trade in a phone and get your iPhone XR cheaper. But the story goes like this. Apple is sending unsolicited notifications for new carpool karaoke episodes and Apple Music Echo support. Apple has been sending out these notifications to iOS users promoting carpool karaoke episodes and the availability. I'm seriously, I can't read this without laughing. And the availability of Apple Music on Amazon Echo devices. Apple doesn't appear to be sending these notifications to everyone, so it's not clear what criteria they're using to determine who to send content to. And one Twitter user tweeted out after getting one of these notifications, "Why did Apple just send me a notification to an all-new carpool karaoke, something I've never watched and have absolutely no interest in?" And it kind of creates an air of desperation, doesn't it? And this is one of those things I absolutely deplore. When an app developer sends you a notification about something to market something, it immediately makes my blood boil, because that is not what notifications are for. I never gave you my permission to market stuff to me in such an intrusive way. Notifications are ways to communicate relevant information to me about an experience that's happening inside the app. Maybe somebody just liked one of my really funny and clever tweets. I get lots of likes on those, and I like to make sure I get notifications for each one. I don't want to know about marketing, but I know I tend to get more annoyed by this stuff than other people. Leander, if you got a tweet about carpool karaoke, would you think anything of it?
A notification? I don't know. I can see how people get bent out of shape about it, because Apple's App Store forbids app developers from using notifications for these kind of reasons, right? These purposes. And then, so then here's Apple doing it. And it also kind of fits into like this whole sort of narrative about them pushing all these kind of discounts and promotions for the latest iPhones because they're not selling very well. So it's sort of like, you know, what's Apple up to? Are they kind of getting kind of desperate and they're sort of they're trying to make every buck they possibly can? I don't know. There's worse things. There are so many notifications coming through my phone. I get more bent out of shape when it starts ringing. you know, that's more intrusive than some ping, you know, from about carpool karaoke. And to be honest, like, I don't know, you know, like I probably wouldn't mind checking out a couple of carpool karaoke episodes. But yeah, I can see how people get bent out of shape about it.
I haven't watched Apple's carpool karaoke ever since it changed hands from James What's His Face to whoever's doing it now. you can see I'm clearly very informed of this topic.
Right.
But
yeah.
James Corden. He was great. He was the part of that show that made it so magical, is his interactions with the celebrities in the car. Who do they have doing it now?
Well, they change the host every time. Obviously, you've never watched the show because, yeah, James Corden is replaced by like a guest celebrity, and it's like weird celebrity pairings and stuff each time.
Have you watched it? Is it interesting and wildly entertaining?
I don't know, but James Corden still does it, and he's also behind it. It's his company, like, that makes it for Apple. It's just he's not the host every time. I haven't watched any episodes, so I can't tell you if they're good. They're probably trash. So
it would be kind of like the same as going to a concert. You go to a Stevie Wonder show, and he's like, "Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to play tonight. I'm going to have my cousin play." And then, like, some guy you've never heard of comes out and plays instead, and you're like, "Wait a second."
But I think the appeal of carpool karaoke. Like, you're not watching carpool karaoke to watch James Corden sing. Nobody gives a fuck about that. They want to go and see Seal or Stevie Wonder or whoever the guest is, or Migos, rap in the car with James Corden being the awkward, silly, white British guy.
All I'll say is that episode with James Corden and the Chili Peppers was one of the most magical 20 minutes of YouTube I've ever seen.
Okay.
And I don't think anyone could have replicated that. I don't know who Migos is, but I doubt that episode was...
You don't know who Migos is?
I don't know who Migos is.
No, I got no clue. I know who Tekashi 6ix9ine is, because I'm
You
hard.
Don't know Migos?
No, who listens to Migos?
Oh,
give me a break.
Come on, everyone
you
knows.
Know
even
Migos.
I know who Migos is.
Is he one of those people that makes fast-talking music?
It's three people. It's the rap group.
Migos is three people. Oh,
yeah.
That's just like
worst,
that Leonard
isn't it?
Skinner fella.
Yeah, it's like Twisted Sister. It's like, who's the who's
How
he?
Do you
no,
not
it's a they.
Know who
what?
Migos are.
I've like, literally become that old guy asking about bands I've ever heard. That's hilarious.
Right.
Yeah, I have no clue, and I take great pride in not knowing. In fact, I'm not even going to look it up after we're done with this episode. I'm going to make it my life's mission to never find out another fact about Migos as long as I live. Yeah, so thoughts on receiving notifications, Buster, before we move on? If Apple sent you a notification, are you going to wig out, or are you just going to move on with your life?
No, I totally agree. That's bullshit. I get mad about that with other apps, and so Apple doing that is not cool. Like, I don't like turning on notifications for any app now just because of that one factor. I don't try. Like, you'll get a game like, oh, you know, people are battling in the arena tonight. Come join the fray. And it's just like, you mother effer. That was not what notifications are for. So
Exactly. I totally agree. Okay, let's move on to the actual interesting story this week. This week in Apple history, Apple signs a clone Mac deal with a company called Power Computing. Many of you probably maybe know the higher level of this story, that Apple was doing this previously. But here are the details, and it's actually kind of quite fascinating. And quite honestly, I kind of wish they were still doing this. In 1994, Apple Computer signed a deal with Power Computing. Power. Raw power. Allowing the company to produce Macintosh-compatible computers. With their market share falling. Oh, boy, this is starting to sound familiar, isn't it? Longtime rival Microsoft steaming ahead thanks to its software licensing strategy. Apple executives thought the only way to compete was for Apple to hand over its operating system to third-party Macs, because, you know, everyone loves Apple OS. They always have. The Mac clone era turned out to be a disaster for Apple. Rather than spurring Mac sales, it just meant cheaper Macs, which actually sounds amazing, doesn't it? As a result, Apple took a massive hit in its earned per unit in the amount in took a hit. I can't speak. Took a hit in the amount it earned per unit. Apple CFO Fred Anderson later said, "But the strategy actually cost the company money. They were only charging $50 for every Mac clone they sold, and they didn't even come close to recouping the money they lost per computer. Eventually, they were desperate to get out of the deal, and the only way to do it was to buy the entire company of Power Computing in 1997 for $100 million so that they could stop licensing their software." You know, I got to say, would it not be at least mildly intriguing for Apple to do this now? I know they never would. I know that. But what if they gave permission to license their OS to a company that has a similar design aesthetic and attention to detail, like Razer, to see what Razer could do with their hardware? Think how much your Mac is... Well, think about the ports that your Mac may be missing, the features that it's missing, the fact that it doesn't have compatibility with modern GPUs, because Apple seems to be the bottleneck in creating or iterating on their hardware as fast as they could be. And think about a third-party strategy where another company, just one company, if they just let one company do this, I would be interested to see what kind of products they came out with. I'm just saying. Leander, you were there on the ground. You were what, a young man of maybe 20 at the time on the
scene? Mid-20s, yeah. I was working at Macworld, you know, my first sort of real job in tech journalism here in the States.
Did you say Macworld?
Sorry, Mac
Week. Mac Week, okay.
Yeah, I was a reporter for Mac mm-hmm. Week, yeah. And, yeah, it was right in the middle of this whole clone stuff, you know, and it was great for customers because companies like Power Computing were coming out with these really fast and really good, you know, sort of value machines that were undercutting Apple's own machines. Mm-hmm. And they were much quicker and they were really great at branding. Like they had this sort of like guerrilla branding. So it was like they had, I don't know the name of the cartoon character, but he's a famous character from, I think, some American comic strip. And it was like, let's kick Microsoft's ass. And they had this character. It was like a Popeye character, right? You know, like punching.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Punching Bill Gates or something like that. And everyone had these T-shirts and posters. And they were like really sort of scrappy and really sort of like much less staid than Apple, you know, because Apple's going to be Apple's kind of like a little bit sort of uptight and very proper. Mm-hmm. And these guys were very, you know, they were sort of using guerrilla marketing techniques and they'd get these huge crowds at Macworld. I'm going to go to Macworld and they were chucking out T-shirts and hats and it was like a riot.
They have one of those cool T-shirt cannons where they're just shooting people and people are just going wild for them.
Yeah, it was nuts. I saw people fighting, you know, like each other on the floor of Macworld. I think I wrote a story about it for Mac Week. It was like, it was completely bonkers.
And by fighting, you mean you were fighting.
Oh, I was standing there just like completely flabbergasted. I'm like, you know, over a T-shirt. Uh-huh. But anyway, and there was some other ones like Motorola was one another one and UMAX. Hmm. I can't remember the others. There was a few of them. But of course, you know, what Apple sort of didn't really realize was that these companies, they had much lower overhead, you know, and they were selling machines cheaper than Apple could sell them. And so Apple was hoping to grow the whole Mac market. They were hoping to pull up Microsoft. They were jealous of Microsoft and Microsoft's business model, mm-hmm. you know, which of licensing to all these hardware vendors. But it just never did. And all it did was cannibalize Apple's sales. So the entire Mac market, you know, remained more or less the same size. So that, you know, the overall sales of Macs didn't increase against Windows machines. All it did was cannibalize Apple's own sales.
So people went from Apple to the cheaper value Macs coming from, right. Okay.
yeah, to Power Computing and stuff like that. And it was really putting them in trouble, you know. And then on top of that, Windows 95 came out like a year later. A few months after they started licensing clones, and that was another huge nail in Apple's coffin because, you know, all of a sudden Windows 95 was kind of like, you know, so Mac-like that people were like, you know, well, why buy a Mac? You know, it costs twice as much. You can get a cheap Windows machine from like Compaq or. One of the other, you know, I'm not sure if Dell was around then, but Gateway, Dell, I guess, was just starting up, you know, and it kind of worked like a Mac, but it cost a lot less. So, yeah, you know, these two things alone, you know, nearly put Apple out of business in a couple of years until Jobs came along and killed it.
It's interesting, though, that you started off by saying it was great for consumers.
Yeah, it was great for a customer because, right. You know, like you could get a cheap Mac.
Sure.
Or a cheaper Mac. I mean, they were still much more expensive than Windows machines. It's funny because like this is sort of like around the time when I guess you know like the internet was just sort of taken off as well, like 94, 95, and it was like you know like computers sort of most people didn't have a computer at home. You know, they had a computer maybe at work, but like buying a computer for the home was you know because why? What would you want to do on it? You know, it was before games. It was you could run spreadsheets and you could do. You know, some accounting stuff and things like that. But and of course, you could surf the net. But even that wasn't easy. Like a lot of them didn't come. You had to buy a modem. You had to get like an, you know, AOL, I guess, was just sort of taken off then. So I don't know. You know, a lot of people, it was like it was a huge growth spurt for the whole PC market. And, you know, Microsoft was killing it because they were, you know, their strategy of licensing to all these IBM clone makers, you know, was a great, strategy for the PC industry at that time, because all these hardware makers were competing with each other, like you know, to sell cheap computers to consumers, and prices were plummeting, you know. So HP and Gateway and Compaq you know, were falling over each other and to make ever cheaper machines. And then Windows 95, you know, kind of like a Mac, it was good enough for most people. You know, you could buy a relatively cheap computer then. And Apple just, you know, got really sort of flat-footed. They went from being one of the biggest computer makers at the time. You know, like in the early 90s, Apple was huge. It was really massive. And it was the biggest computer maker in the world and selling millions and millions of computers. And then, like, by 95, 96, they were in deep, deep doo-doo. You know, like, and by the time my Jobs came along in 96, they were like 6 months away from bankruptcy and going out of business completely.
Wow. So this entire ordeal almost put them out of business.
Yeah, because they were jealous of Microsoft and their success and the success of all these clones, and they thought, you know, let's copy the business model.
Right.
But of course, Jobs, you know, was like, you know, this is madness because you're never going to get as cheap commodity hardware as someone like Dell or Gateway. You know, they had all these like crazy, like you know, sort of build to order programs. They were very, very quick and very nimble. They weren't doing anything like, you know, design. They were just slapping the cheapest components in the cheapest box. You know, they weren't really doing that much marketing. It was also like direct to the consumer. They didn't have like all these developers and these like dealerships and these relationships to maintain. You know, Apple was just kind of like at the time was sort of like had this sort of outdated business model. But Jobs, you know, was like all about vertical integration. And of course, when he came back, you know, the first machine that he put out, they put out really that had that sort of Jobs stamp on it was the iMac, the Bondi Blue iMac. You know, and it was you know, the beginning of this sort of like, you know, and of course now Apple's business model looks like genius, where they tightly control hardware, software, services, you know, the entire experience, including like the retail experience and all the advertising. And a lot of the other computers makers are sort of in trouble now. It's funny how that the business model at the time they were trying to copy the Microsoft, Intel, the Wintel site, you know, duopoly, looked like it was going to be their savior, but it was almost their, you know, guaranteed their doom. And now, you know, Microsoft is sort of copying Apple's model where it's trying to control the whole thing. It's putting out its own hardware, Surface, you know, with the tablets.
Yeah.
And it's trying to copy Apple's business model and having sort of, I don't know, it's now more successful. But, you know, so they're having, you know, they're looking more successful with Apple. It's funny how these two philosophies, you know, like throughout the computer business were playing off of each other and, you know, at the time, it seemed like, you know, remember those calls when Apple came out with the iPod, like they had to license iTunes because the iPod was locking people into the Apple, you know, ecosystem, and it was denying consumer choice, and it was monopolistic, and they were going to be doomed, you know, like there was when the iPod came out, when that was a big success, you know, this is like in 2001. You know, even then, people still had this idea that, you know, the road to success in the computer market was to license, you know, your IP, your software or your services to other manufacturers who would sort of, you know, drive down hardware prices. It was so engendered in, like, people's ideas about how the computer business should operate that, you know, for a long time, Jobs was really battling against this, like, this entrenched mindset that the way you should this is the way you should operate in the computer business. You know, you should license as far and wide as possible. But the clone showed that it was a disaster for a company like Apple. And that, you know, and then this idea where you control everything from top to bottom, the entire stack, you know, was really borne out with the iPod, but then especially with the iPhone.
It's interesting too that Apple didn't have success with this model, but Microsoft did. It worked so well for Microsoft, but it didn't work for Apple. And I wonder why that is. Is it a cultural thing? Why was Microsoft finding some success?
Microsoft is only licensing its software. Uh-huh. That was the huge mistake that IBM made. You know, when they hired Microsoft to do the operating system, they didn't get an exclusive license from Microsoft. So, you know, like Microsoft said, yeah, sure, okay, we'll build, you know, whatever it was, DOS, you know, for your computers, but we also want to be able to sell it to other hardware makers. And then immediately, you know, like, because IBM was using all these off-the-shelf parts. I mean, they didn't make anything. Nothing was proprietary. The hard drives, like, you know, Sony or Toshiba or whatever, you know, the RAM came from, you know, chip makers. The CPU came from Intel. Like, nothing in those boxes was proprietary to IBM. Nothing. So, you know, companies like Compaq could come along. They could buy the exact same hard drives, the exact same RAM, the exact same power supplies, and slap together their own box. You know, and because Compaq didn't have all the overhead of IBM, they could do it a lot cheaper. And so all these companies grew up, you know, and then and Microsoft had this non-exclusive licenses with all of them. They all needed software to run on their machines. And so they were all driving, you know, while they were competing like crazy against each other, driving hardware prices down, Microsoft was getting, you know, like this big fat, you know, I can't remember what it was, $150, $200 license from, or maybe it was less than that, $50 from each machine, and was a license to print money for them. Because they didn't have any hardware, right? They're just licensing their software. They build Windows once, and they can license to everybody. Like, you know, the margins at Microsoft were insane. They were making like 70% profit.
I think, and it's still the capstone of their business too, or the foundation of their business. I mean, Windows and Office, I think, make Microsoft most of their money. Although that does seem like it's starting to change now with their cloud services and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They're starting to diversify into other businesses.
Right.
But they were trying to do hardware for a long time, and it just wasn't working. I mean, doing hardware, they were trying to copy Apple, as you were saying, in so many different ways. And it just wasn't working for them. They didn't have the culture or the design philosophy to pull off what Apple has been doing. And they don't seem to be as design-centric as Apple is. I mean, who is? Very few companies.
Right.
But they kept trying, and
Well, their hardware is pretty. It's pretty respectable. The Surface tablets are nicely made. They're nicely designed.
Especially today.
Yeah.
Have you seen that brown Zune in person?
I used to have a brown Zune.
Did you?
I liked it a lot.
You loved it.
Yeah, I was really into it. It had a nice color screen. The operating system was really quite well designed. The problem was like loading songs onto it. It was always really clunky.
Ooh, that's kind of a problem when you're using a music player.
Yeah, well, getting onto it, that was always like, you know, because Apple had the iTunes and it was easy to suck it all across.
I just love that it was brown. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I personally like brown. Hey, brown's a great color. My hair is brown, but you know, with a gadget, a brown gadget, doesn't that just kind of sound odd? It's like, what color do you want?
Yeah.
I really want a brown one. It's like, I want a brown car.
Bit bizarre,
no one drives brown cars.
Well,
next time you're at an airport and you're flying, look down. All the colors are like white or black.
Right. How to make brown cool, isn't it? Especially when you're Microsoft.
Brown gets a bad rap. I mean, there's so many pleasant things in life that are brown. You know, it's just it gives brown a bad name.
Might have made chocolate, you know. That's what I liked about it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But they remember that Microsoft used to make great mice. You know, like I had a Microsoft mouse. Like I remember back in the day, whenever this, you know, around this time, like in the late 90s, the best mice came from Microsoft. Because Apple would only do a one button mouse, it used to drive you crazy.
See that you know, the mice between these two companies perfectly delineate their design philosophies. I mean, Apple creates something that's beautiful but not necessarily practical. Microsoft's mouse looks like it was created by a Russian astronaut. And I mean, it's as practical as possible and not beautiful in any way, but it's so comfortable and it has buttons in all the right places that you actually want to use it.
Yeah.
And like you said, you get a mouse from Apple. I've never liked Apple mice. In fact, the current one, I forget, the Magic Mouse? What a horrendous device that is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you bought a new Mac, I mean, you'd go buy a mouse from someone else. I mean, it was like, you know, you buy it at the same time. You get a new Mac and, okay, I've got to buy a mouse. That's the first thing you had to buy was like a mouse from someone else. Usually Microsoft.
They should just retire that damn thing and give everyone a trackpad.
Mm-hmm.
The trackpad is so much superior to the Magic Mouse in virtually every way. But anyway, okay, so there you have it. Now you know the complete history of the clone Macs, the Clone Wars. The Apple Clone Wars. That's a phrase I just came up with at the start of the show impromptu. And
I think it was called the Clone Wars at the time.
The Clone Wars, yeah, the Apple Clone Wars. That's a phrase that you can use, and you don't even have to give me credit. Okay, let's move on to our favorite movies of 2018. I racked my brain. I prepared for this segment like 10 minutes, which is like 6 to 7 minutes more than I prepare for most of these stories. So you know it's going to be good. I got a whole list, actually. I got a list of like, I don't know, five things. I have a list of literally five things, and I'm not going to go into great detail over all these. How many do you guys have? Buster, how many do you have?
I just got like three.
Okay. Do you want to just, maybe we should just read our lists entirely, otherwise this is going to take way too long. And then give us a little blurb about why you like the movies at the end or something. What were you going to say, Leander?
I was going to say, when I had some prep as well on this, and I'm like, I can't even remember which movies I saw. So I'm looking at all these lists, and like I made a list too, like of three ones that I wanted to choose. But then I made a list of all the ones that movies that I wanted to see this year, but never got a chance to see. And I've got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 2, 4, 6. 26 movies that I wanted to see.
That is exactly the boat I'm in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's funny.
So you have a list of 30 that you didn't see, but...
Right.
If but only really, the segment were called the movies of 2018 we wish we saw.
Didn't get to see, right.
Maybe we could do that in a future segment.
Yeah.
But you said you actually saw. You have 2 or 3 on your list that you actually saw.
Right.
That's plenty.
Okay.
That's
I have
plenty.
One.
Okay. That's even better.
You've only got one?
Hey, I only need one.
It's that good. It's that good. It's, I saw this one. It was early 2018. And I said, that's it. I'm done. That's the only movie I need to see this year. Okay. Well, Buster, why don't you kick us off and then just do a little blurb about why you liked the movies that you're pitching. Buster's gone. I think we just lost him. Isn't it ironic that he's been here? Oh, no, he's back.
He's going to talk about A Quiet Place, and that was just his run-up.
Like, what a brilliant strategy. Well, the question is, though, can you guys hear Buster? Buster, are you there?
No, I can't hear him.
Okay, give it a sec. Maybe it will... Lewis?
There we go.
What about Leander?
I'm here.
Okay, I think we got everyone, right? Okay, Buster, take us home.
Which for movies, what ones did I like?
Yeah, give me the list.
Incredibles 2, just because I like Pixar. Oh. So, oh, great.
That's surprising. Okay.
Sicario, Day of the Dead.
Huh.
With Benicio Del Toro and Josh Brolin. That movie was probably even better than the first Sicario, which was really freaking good.
Wait, Sicario, Day of the Dead, is that one movie?
Isn't it Day of the Soldado?
Yeah, it's one movie. What?
It's a Soldado or something, wasn't it? Not Day of the Dead.
Sicario. Oh, yeah. Well, that's what it's called. Day of the Soldado. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, Soldado.
But, I've always wanted to see that movie. Haven't seen it. Okay.
Yeah, it's about like the war between the U.S. and Mexico drug cartel, and it's pretty crazy. It takes some cool spins and stuff. And then probably favorite movie of the year was Black Klansman. That movie was so funny. Yeah, it's about a guy named Ron Stallworth. He's a police officer in Colorado Springs in the 70s, and he basically like infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan over the phone. Only his white Jewish coworker is the actual cop that goes to the meetings and does. So it's like this black guy and this Jewish guy infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan, and it's pretty freaking hilarious. It's got a God. What's his name from? Adam Driver. He plays like the Jewish cop that helps infiltrate it.
Oh,
but yeah,
man, he's so good.
And it's by Spike Lee. But the whole movie was pretty funny.
This sounds like an extended version of the Dave Chappelle sketch.
Yeah. Well, kind of. Yeah.
I know the one you
meant. One of the greatest comedy sketches
he's
of
blind,
all time.
Like the blind
yeah. Basically, yeah, like that blind Klansman sketch, only, you know, the black guy's in on the joke that, you know, what? The black guy's saying all this bad, you know, bad stuff about black people and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And just like, playing to the Klan to like gain favor with them.
You know, this is exactly why I was hoping you're going to be here for this segment, because
you hadn't heard about that. This is a Spike Lee movie based on a true story.
No, I haven't heard about it. There's so many movies out now and television shows. I feel like it's impossible
right,
to keep up.
Yeah,
especially if you don't have cable television. People will talk about a movie, and I'm like, "That's a movie? I didn't even know that existed." And I knew Buster. Buster always tends to watch the non, I don't know, commercially. Well, the non-AAA movies, those are the ones I tend to know the most about.
Like, I would say, like, also great movies, like big blockbusters, Mission Impossible, the new one was good, Avengers was fine, I want to see the new Spider-Man Into the Multiverse, that one everybody says is really good, so I need to go and see that.
Didn't even hear about that one.
What?
Spider-Man Into the Multiverse?
Yeah, dude, it's animated, and it's Spider-Man Miles Morales version, only he connects with different Spider-Mans from different like parallel universes and stuff like that. Supposedly it's really good. Like,
well, did this go
movie
to the theaters?
Yeah, it just came out this weekend.
It's playing now, yeah.
Yeah.
It's an animated Spider-Man movie in theaters?
Yeah, how have you not heard of it? Oh my God.
You're embarrassing, Irfan.
I know.
Yeah, you're the one who's pitching a cartoon and I'm embarrassing. Got him. No, I'm just joking. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about this at all.
Do you live under a rock? I guess you have two little girls.
You know what?
Biggest box office.
Yeah. I'm kind of. I've been evicted from my house and I live under a rock now. And it hurts my feelings. I did tell you that before the show, and I asked you not to make a comment about it. So you've broken your promise. Yeah, I don't know. How do you hear about movies? I have an ad blocker, and I don't watch cable television. How am I supposed to hear about new movies? Before, I was constantly seeking them out because I had Movie Pass, and I had a free pass to go to the movies every night. Now I don't have it anymore, so I'm not interested in trying to figure out what movies are coming out and stuff.
Don't you watch like a lot of movie trailers? That's like the thing for me. I watch tons of movie trailers. Every day.
Where do you watch the movie trailers?
On the internet while I'm working. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just part of the cult of Mac job where you're just like cruising the internet all the time.
Don't you have to know the movie exists before you go and see the trailer?
No, because you're just like, no, there's like news posts like, oh, check out this amazing movie trailer for this cool movie that's going to come out in 6 months.
Where do you see those?
Gizmodo. Wow. The Verge, Reddit.com, Twitter.
I just watched.
There was a new Hellboy trailer
ever.
That just came out.
Right,
oh,
I was
going to
say, everyone's talking about the Hellboy trailer today.
Man, jeez. I actually love the Hellboy series. Those Hellboy movies are so good. Hellboy 2 especially is
new
probably
new ones look really
one.
Good, too. Like, yeah, I don't know how you don't watch trailers.
I don't know either, man. You know what the best way to get your trailer fix is to go into the Apple Trailers app on Apple TV and just watch trailers there. And that's what clearly I need to do that because I don't know any of the movies that are out right now or any of the ones that have come out since I quit Movie Pass. Okay, Buster, do you need to take off because the librarian is going to come shush you out?
I'm going to take off and start uploading this thing right now.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Thank you, Buster. We'll catch you later.
See
okay, Lewis, you've only got one, right? Why don't you go next?
All right. The only movie that I saw this year that made me actually excited and thrilled was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
The Ballad of
Have
Buster.
Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
Did you pitch this on a previous show?
I
Did you make
it.
This up? Is this even a real thing?
New Coen Brothers movie.
This is a great movie. It's a Western anthology movie by the Coen Brothers. You know, I was a little bit worried about it because it wasn't like straight to Netflix, but I mean, they basically showed it in theaters like for a week so that they could get award. You know, get what was it? Award
nominations.
Be eligible for the awards, right?
Oh,
And then it went to Netflix, and I'm like, oh, geez, you know, Coen Brothers. I mean, I've loved most of their movies, but you know, I don't know why is their movie going to Netflix? This could be.
It's a new straight to DVD, right? Oh, at least that's what people think.
It can be. But I'll tell you, this movie. You know, you start watching it. If you're a Coen Brothers fan, you start watching this. You're just like, oh my god, this is awesome. Huh. You know, it's got the excellent dialogue. It's got the, you know, really like creative characters, and it's just awesome. It's an anthology. It's six short stories, basically. They're not really connected. I mean, the one thing that's kind of like, I don't know, not super creative about it is that the framework of the movie is that, you know, oh, it's a book and here's a story. You know, it's like Canterbury Tales or something, right? You've seen this a million times in different movies, right? So each short story is a separate thing. They're not connected at all. You know, there's one with like a mouthy kind of geeky gunfighter, you know. There's one with James Franco playing a rather unfortunately unlucky bank robber. It's one with Liam Neeson as a guy traveling with his, partner, companion in this sort of, not vaudeville, but, you know, like traveling through the West. You know, it's everything's in the West. It's like in the 70s, something like that. There's a one with a gold prospector played by Tom Waits.
Wow, you know, good cast.
It's really great. And you know, each one is maybe... When I first heard about this, I thought it was going to be like six separate movies, but each separate section is, you know, 15, 20 minutes, maybe one of them's 30, I don't know. And I was so engrossed, I wasn't keeping, you know, taking notes or anything, but it's just like throughout it, you know, I'm not going to tell you any more about it. It's just, if you like the Coen Brothers, if you like, you know, there's plenty of violence, plenty of twists, a lot of great writing. It won best screenplay at one of the awards, you know, festivals it was at. And, you know, it's just really funny and creative. And I was like kind of renewed my belief that movies can really be smart and entertaining and surprising.
There's a movie reviewer I really like named Jeff Cannata, and he loves the Coen Brothers movies. And he said anyone that has a deep appreciation for the written word, the spoken word, tends to like their movies because they're so good at constructing sentences in an engaging and entertaining way. And that's what I find that I like about those movies. They're not flashy, but the exchanges between the characters are written in such a playful and entertaining way. Like the exchange between Matt Damon and that, what's that girl's name? Haley, I forget her last name in, I'm forgetting the name of the movie too, that came out like 2 years ago. What was the famous Coen Brothers movie that came? True Grit. That movie with Haley, what's her face, and Matt Damon, that exchange where they're talking to each other in that hotel room. And it was hilarious and so well written. Do you know what I'm talking about, Leander? You're over there nodding. I do,
yeah, because my daughter submitted a screen test for that. And it was like they had an open call for the girl to play.
Are you kidding?
The actress, yeah.
Wow.
But it was just, she wasn't invited. It was open to everybody, you know, like you just have to send in a video. So we recorded a video in a hotel room somewhere and sent it in. She didn't hear back.
Let me guess, you played Matt Damon.
Well, he wanted me, but I wasn't available.
You're like, they needed someone good looking and charismatic, and who else better than me?
Right.
Okay, well, let me go next because I feel my picks are so
lame. I wanted to say something about that Buster Scruggs.
Oh, sir, sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Hated it.
Of course you did.
Leander and I always have exactly the opposite views of movies. How could you possibly hate that?
It was everything about the Coen Brothers movies. Like the undercurrents of it. Sort of, it was mean spirited. There's definitely a mean spiritedness to the Coen Brothers canon, right? I mean, all their movies are really mean. All the characters have terrible fates. And then this was like, you know, like you said, an anthology where every, you know, six people, six characters all befall more or less terrible fates. Not all of them, but, you know, five out of six or whatever.
Jeez, spoiler alert.
And I just find it means, I just find, you know, all the things that I don't like about the Coen Brothers were all, I thought, front and center in this. And mainly, you know, primarily the mean-spiritedness of them.
God, I mean, it's the West, right? And to me, it was like, wow, that, you know, can you imagine living at a time like that? I mean, these people are out in the middle of nowhere. They got horses to get around. I mean, can you imagine living and never being able to get more than, you know, 5 miles from your house?
Yeah, right. I always think about that. Like, you drive 20 miles to pick something up from a store and you drive back, like that could have been like a 2 or 3 days journey. You could have died on the way there.
Sure.
Or you injure yourself. And what did they do back then? Like you break a tooth nowadays.
You just go to
the dentist, you know, and they just pull it out or something. What do they do for the entirety of human history? There was no science, or there was no anesthetics, or
there's no penicillin,
medical knowledge. Yeah, they just rubbed a leaf on it and hoped that, you know, you would get better. And they were just lived in pain, and they lived with disfigurements because they couldn't get proper medical attention. Thank God we live in the time that we do. I wouldn't have made it long in the 1800s. God. I would have been one of the first to go, I think, with my skill set.
Blind guy like me, dead in a minute. Yeah, I mean, it's for sure, Leander. I mean, it's not. It's dark humor, right? I mean, it's basically all about how cheap life was, right?
I guess.
I loved it because
they're all about death, weren't they? That's the theme, right? That runs through it. Each story is about death in one form or another.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to give it all away, sure. Yeah, death plays an important part in that,
okay,
that
let's
movie.
Let's not spoil anything, please. Some of us want to see the movie and not know the entire plot.
I don't think it's spoiling to say that's the theme of each of these different stories, to be honest. I mean,
if it has a theme, that's it. But, yeah, each section is so creative. I mean, didn't you find yourself going, wow, never saw a story like that, never heard a story like that? And what Irfan was saying about the dialogue, I mean, the dialogue was, I mean,
well, yeah, I mean,
I've seen so many movies where I'm just like, oh my God, this just really feels like it was either written by a committee,
yeah,
or
yeah.
written by somebody, you know, as fast as possible, and they don't really care about words. These guys are poets,
right,
man,
yeah, yeah.
And the performances are excellent. I mean, I found myself laughing out loud, and even though it is this really grim, dark, you know, ending to some of these stories, you know, it's still like just awesome.
Yeah, well, that was disappointing because I've always got high expectations of the Coen Brothers. Like, they're so, you know, like a lot of that I've only seen a couple of their movies, but you know, like a huge fan. One of my favorite movies of all time, Miller's Crossing, and that's all crazy dialogue. love that movie; could watch it endlessly, over and over again. Huge fan of a lot of the other ones, you know, like something like, you know, No Country for Old Men. I mean, the worst thing about that movie is that's a mean-spirited movie too.
Oh, that's grim.
That's a very, very grim.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Very, very grim
really?
Movie.
It's on my list.
But so, actually, Andrew, I
really wanted to like it. You know, I really wanted to enjoy the movie, and I just did not.
Well, I saw somebody else saying they walked out, or you know, it was just too bleak, whatever. Blah blah blah. I don't know. Okay, what about this? Pan shot.
What?
What?
You weren't paying attention.
I couldn't hear what you said.
Pan shot!
He's still confused.
I don't think you were paying attention to the movie if that doesn't draw
a response. No, it does. I know what you mean. although I'm trying
to... It's probably my accent's bad. It should be more like, pan shot!
That makes it funnier. I don't even know what you guys are talking about, but it does make it funnier when you say it that way.
I don't think that spoils the movie, but man, I was losing it during that.
Okay, you know, as much as I'd love to hear you guys talk about this same movie for the next 25 minutes.
The movie that you're never going
to see. Yeah, and I would just like to point out my favorite thing about this entire conversation is we were about to move on, but Leander interjected just to tell you, hated it! stop. Yes, I have something I want to add. Yes, I hated it. Okay, let me rattle off through my lame list. You guys all have, like, these non-commercial Art Nouveau picks, and I have a list of AAA movies, and I think I didn't even mean to do this, but I think I might have them in order of my favorites. I don't know, maybe not. So, first of all, yes, I put Avengers Infinity War on here because it was a great movie. And as far as AAA movies go, it had one of the best depictions of an antagonist that I've seen in a popular movie in a long time. What I loved about Thanos is... they didn't turn him into a monster. He was humanized. They made a case. They allowed that character, and I'm kind of stealing something from Jeff Cannata here. They allowed him to make his case, and he wasn't just some evil character driven by evil, wanting to do evil things. He had motive, and his motives were easy to understand, and they nuanced his position, and they made they made it capable to identify with certain aspects of his argument, so you could see why he was doing what he was doing. And it reminded me of the movie Heat. I don't know if you guys have seen Heat, but yep. The thing I love about that movie is the good guy is really kind of not a great dude, and the bad guy has good character, but he's living a thief's life. And so you find yourself liking the bad guy and disliking the good guy. And that interplay is what I really liked about Thanos, because they built that in. So that was, okay, Avengers. Black Panther, loved it. It's hard to believe that movie came out this year. But I loved the costumes. I loved the design. I loved the story. The movie was wildly entertaining. Again, the music. Wow, the music. I could do a whole segment just on the music. It was made by this guy who does the music for, oh my gosh, I'm totally spacing out on his name, Donald Glover. He does the music for all of Childish Gambino's albums. His name is Johansson. I can't remember his last name. I think he's Swedish, and he is unbelievably talented. When I found out he did the music for Black Panther, I was like, aha, that is why Childish Gambino's albums are so good, because their power, the undercurrent, is driven by this guy. And this guy is one of the most creative forces in music that I've seen in a long time. Real young, long career ahead of him. Okay, you're going to love this, Lewis. One of my favorite movies of the year, one of my favorite movies of the entire year, Annihilation.
I knew it was coming.
Annihilation. That movie haunts me even to this day.
Yeah, me too.
I was gripped from start to finish. I found it to be wildly engaging. And I, unlike you, I love the story from start to finish. The mystery that they left hanging there for the entire movie. And then, even at the very end, they somehow ended the movie in a satisfying way with not revealing too much and even injecting more mystery and wonder into the end of the movie to draw you in. I would actually love to see a second one. Absolutely love that movie. It's probably one of my favorite Natalie Portman movies ever. I think maybe the only other one that she's done that I've liked close to as much was the very first movie that she did called Leon the Professional, which if you haven't seen, was her first movie and a really good movie. I also really loved A Quiet Place. I don't know if you guys saw it. It was about this. It was good. You would actually really like it a lot. You should see it. It's about this family that is surviving in this world where these creatures have taken over. And I'm not spoiling anything here. This is all over the trailers. These creatures have like supersonic hearing, and they hunt by hearing. And there are some special dynamics of this family that allow them to survive. And there are parts of the plot that I actually didn't even understand, or they didn't really click with me until like weeks after I saw the movie. And I was like, aha, this is why this family was still around and why they were able to survive this lifestyle that virtually everyone else couldn't survive. I'm trying to be careful about what I say, 'cause I don't want to spoil anything for you. And it's about a family bonding together to survive in this terrible scenario. Really liked it a lot. Let's see here. What else we got? Okay. Finally, I think you knew what's coming. I saw it 9 times in the movie theater, possibly 10. I actually stopped counting. I actually bought it on iTunes. It's one of the few movies I actually bought on iTunes in 4K because I loved it so much. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Really?
God, was that this year?
That was this year. I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it? I think it was at the beginning of the year. And I went into this movie thinking it was going to be a whole lot of suck, just like I did. The only other movie where I had low expectations that were similar, where I was expecting to go in and think it was going to suck just as bad as this movie, was another Jack Black movie called Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny. And like that movie, I went into this one and I came out and I was like, I haven't had that much fun in a movie in a long time. And then I went back and saw it 8 more times because MoviePass was picking up the bill, so why not? I love the movie. It's so much fun, and it, to me, is a great depiction of a classic fun cinema experience. There's nothing particularly magical about the story, but the characters and the casting all work really well together. And The Rock, this might be his best film that he's ever made. And it cemented his position as a AAA actor in my mind. Like, he's done a lot of really bad movies. And after this one, he did this weird one called Skyscraper. And then he did King Kong, which is another weird movie that I didn't see because it didn't look that good. So he has a few really great gems in his repertoire. And then he has a lot of bad ones. But this is the best one that he's done so far. It's probably the best movie. It might be his magnum opus. We'll see. It was a really good performance. And the reason is it was a cast of actors you would know working with this cast of actors that were new. And the actors that you would know had to learn the characters of the younger actors. So the younger actors created their characters for their own roles, and then The Rock and his cast had to learn how to act in character as the younger characters. So if you think about it, it's a really sophisticated piece of acting. It's kind of like Robert Downey Jr. in Tropical Thunder, where he had to play another actor playing other actors. And it's impressive. I don't know how you put yourself into a role within a role. It's like Inception roles, where you're doing 2 to 3 characters deep, characters as other characters. It's really impressive, actually. And it showed to me that he was a real legitimate actor. He wasn't just a wrestler trying to be in entertaining movies. I know that's weird to say. I mean, it's The Rock, right? But the guy's talented. I mean, what can you say? He's one of the highest paid actors in Hollywood right now.
He's very charismatic.
He's really charismatic. Say,
so much charisma.
Very, very much. And he does the eyebrow raise just like I do.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. That's his best acting.
That's a special talent right there.
It is. Not everyone can do it. I can do both, Lewis. I can make him bounce up and down.
No way.
Don't make me dribble. Next time I see you, I'm going to dribble for you. Bling, 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 bling. Okay. Leander, give us your weird list of stuff that no one's ever heard of, and let's get this show over.
And actually, it's not that bad. It's not that bad at all.
No.
Okay.
We'll be the judges.
Well, funny enough, you know, one of my favorite movies is the one you already mentioned, was Annihilation.
Wow, you liked it too.
I really liked that movie, yeah. I thought that was really, because it was so original. It was. I really didn't know, it was really unpredictable. And you think it's going to be an action movie, and it's not. It's a lot more thoughtful. It had, you know, and the ending was so weird.
It was that's totally bizarre, wasn't
people
it?
People hated it. Because, and that was
the only part I liked.
This is exactly, but this is one of your classic movies, right? Where they this is like, they dumped this on Netflix. This is one of the first big movies that went to Netflix, right? They showed it for a couple of weeks.
I was shocked when that happened because I loved it so much. It was like, the audience has admitted they all hated this movie.
Yeah, well, I think the studio, I think was, they were really like, how do we market this? Because it's not like, a lot of other science fiction movies, you know, like there's mm-hmm. no, and the ending is so strange that I think I think they didn't know how to market this thing, like, you know, what kind of expectations people would have. And they were afraid that people wouldn't like it. I think this is going to be like a, you know, it's going to be one of your, it's going to be a cult classic.
I think you might be right about that.
And it's the kind of thing that's going to do well on TV and DVD, right? You know, streaming and stuff like that. Because people, it's a little more, you know, intellectual. Not intellectual, but...
You go. Well, that's why you and I liked it, and right. Lewis didn't.
I felt like it wanted to be intellectual.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be more intellectual, but it turned out it was just a bunch of people slogging through a swamp.
Well, the ending's so mysterious that...
Yes. Like I said, that part was great.
I liked it. And like you said, I'd love to see a sequel. I'd love to see more in this. I mean, I was really tempted to read the guy's books. Doesn't he have two or three books... on this story?
I thought it was three. Yeah, I thought it was three. But I haven't read them. I'm always a little leery to do that after the fact. Like, there's this really great movie called The Road, which is one of my favorite movies of all time with Viggo Mortensen. And then I went back and tried to read the book. I think it's by McCormick McCarthy. Yeah.
Awesome.
I had a really hard time following the book because he doesn't use any of the... Books are not my topic that I talk about, so forgive me for describing it this way. The architecture that normally goes into books when you're like, he said, she said, like those kind of mechanisms to show who's actually speaking, that book doesn't use any of them. So I was never really sure who was saying what and what was going on in the book. I couldn't follow it. Who's the derp now? Me. It's come full circle. Me not understand this book.
Well,
this book too long.
I don't like his writing either. Like, I tried to read... what was it called? Blood Meridian and the one about the horses. I can't remember the title now. And it's not easy to get into, really, for sure. It's you know, he's not an accessible writer. Some people love him. I you know, and of course he wrote the I was kind of interested in reading No Country for Old Men.
He wrote that too?
Yeah, I haven't seen that
movie.
Wow. But yeah, I mean, based on what I sort of picked him up, and I just found it, you know, like you, impenetrable. And I didn't like enough of it to... Because, you know, some impenetrable books could be worth it. Like, just saying, like, Trainspotting is not an easy book to read because it's all written in this weird Scottish vernacular. But it's so... I found it really exhilarating when you did get into it. Like, once you started getting into it. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, that's a different debate.
Okay, Annihilation, number one. Good pick, by the way.
Okay, and then the other one I really enjoyed was Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a really great action movie. Great ride, like super thrilling all the way through, really fast moving, funny. The action is amazing, is astonishing, you know, it's a real spectacle. And it's like sort of like, you know, it's like a good Bond movie without all this sort of kind of like, Bond's become a little self-important and overly serious. Mm-hmm. It's like sort of like the kind of like, it's like a kind of a return to a mix between the best parts of the Sean Connery Bond era and the Roger Moore era, you know, where it's like, without, it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't take itself too seriously, you know, like a good Roger Moore Bond movie, and the set pieces are just, you know, great. I like the characterizations, I like all the actors in it, so I really enjoyed that one. That was super fun.
Can I just say the addition of Simon Pegg into those movies really breathe new life into them. Simon Pegg is incredible. He's one of the best comedic actors of our time. Like, you put him in anything, and he just makes the movie better just by being present.
Yeah, yeah.
You hate him, don't you?
No, I do like him. I don't know about the greatest comedic actor of all time.
No, he's not the best of all time. He's one of the best of our time, I think. I mean, he just makes movies. Every movie he's in, he makes better. I don't think I've ever seen a movie with him in it that I didn't like.
Yeah. Well, Shaun
of the Dead picks his roles really well.
Is a superb classic, isn't it?
Oh, that whole series, Shaun of the Dead.
I don't like the last one.
The last one wasn't my favorite. It did grow on me though, and I did watch it like 20 times. What was that? What was the movie called? I can't even remember. The World's End. The World's End. Yes. I always get that confused with the movie with Michael Cera I forget his name too. I can never remember actors' names. This Is the End with Jonah Hill and Michael Cera. And did you guys ever see that movie? It was about this the end of the world happening in Hollywood, and all the actors were stuck in Seth Rogen's house James Franco's house together.
Right. Is it good?
Do you guys ever see that?
No.
Oh my gosh, Leander, you might actually like it. It was really funny. So, like, the premise is they are Seth Rogen has his friend in town. They go to Seth Rogen's house, which is like this impenetrable concrete mansion. And the end of the world just happens to occur during this party that they're having. And they're all trying to survive inside of Seth Rogen's house while the entire world is basically falling apart outside. There's like all this. Well, I don't want to spoil anything. It's hilarious. It's really good if you haven't seen it, but you'll probably hate it. Okay, Mission Impossible, and then do you have any more, Leander? Is that it?
I was going to mention Red Sparrow, which wasn't great, but it was kind of interesting.
Oh, I was intrigued by that movie, but I never saw it.
Yeah, Russian spy movie.
I heard it was really violent.
It is really violent. Some of it's kind of, there's a couple of shocking, violent scenes. There's one that I really didn't like at all.
I heard that Jennifer Lawrence gets totally naked and then kicks some guy's butt in it.
Yeah, I liked it mainly because of her. She's great to watch, you know?
Oh, the truth comes out. Oh, that slipped out.
Well, I don't see there's anything wrong with that. You know, I mean, like, yeah. That's one of the pleasures of going to the movies, isn't it? You know, to watch a great actor or actress.
And she's actually really good, too.
Oh, yeah. She's at the top of her game. And I mean, she's just built to be a movie star. And she's, it's like watching, you know, I don't know, you know, I'd say entirely comparable to someone like, you know, Sean Connery. Back in his day, you know, just attractive, charismatic, and can really sort of, you know, carry a story.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't super great, but it was, you know, I watched it with interest the whole way through, which I can say for, like, you know, Black Panther, you know, like, I hate to say, I mean, I switched it off halfway through. I just couldn't take any more.
What?
Yeah. Well, I think
what's wrong with it?
Well, I switched it off. Just so many superhero tropes, and I gotta admit, I'm gonna go back and watch the rest of it because I switched it off before it became interesting. I think, from what I've read about it,
halfway through,
like the halfway.
I switched it off before it came interesting. I watched the whole first half, and I didn't find any of it interesting.
And the Avengers too, you know, like, I know what you're saying about, like, the, you know, they gave the villain a little more depth, right? He wasn't just pure evil; like, he had these motivations, and they tried, and you know, all great movie villains are somewhat sympathetic, right? Isn't that what makes Frankenstein great, or Dracula even? You know, they're somewhat tragic figures, I was gonna say The Godfather, right? Michael Corleone, you know, like he's doing these terrible things for the right reasons, or what he thinks are the right reasons, which makes him more sympathetic. But like that too, I'm just like, I don't know, I'm so sick of superhero movies. I've got zero, almost like negative, you know, negative 100% interest in superhero movies anymore. Because you've just sort of seen it all before, and you know, the things that anyway, I don't know. I don't think it's really, it's just, so I'm going in with this baggage, you know, so I'm like, oh God, not another superhero movie.
Like, I admit, I might be getting kind of superhero fatigued as well.
I'm sick of,
like I was never a superhero guy, and now every movie is like a superhero movie.
Yeah. And they spend so much time like slugging it out. Like, I don't want to see superheroes fighting, you know, smashing up buildings and destroying cities. And it's just so boring. It's boring. You know, there's nothing new, really. Have you seen anything original? Like, I was so glad when they started. Well, all right, I don't want to get any spoilers, but, you know, at the end of The Avengers, I'm like, yes! Do you know why? I don't spell it out, but I'm like, yes, oh, yes,
no.
Yes.
No, I don't remember why. It's been so long since I've seen that movie, and I only saw it twice. You know, it's not like I saw it nine times like Jumanji. You're going to have to tell me after we stop recording.
Well, the other movie I liked that I was going to mention was Hereditary, which is... And again, because stand-up performance from Toni Collette, who's like the Australian actress, amazing in everything she does. Like, she just, you know, she elevates everything she's in. Like you said... Like
that this, movie looked ultimately creepy. It looked so creepy that I actually ended up not seeing it.
I thought it started out better, and it ended up where it ended up wasn't as great as the premise.
Huh.
Like I was kind of disappointed, you know, like at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. But I definitely enjoyed the first, you know, half, three quarters of the movie,
mm-hmm.
and it had some of it was totally, you know, messed up. It was like, oh my god. The first shark in it is really a shark. It's totally messed up shark. You don't see it coming at all. And it's like, whoa.
Did you yell? Have you ever yelled at the movie theater?
Because I took my kids to see it at the movie theater, and I think we all yelped, and we all jumped out of our seat. It was totally crazy.
That's my problem with these scary movies is I'm a yeller. If the suspense is too strong, when it finally happens, I just go, ah! And then everyone in front of me is startled, and I'm embarrassed. And if I'm holding it something, I might drop it.
That's the best thing about seeing a movie in it with a bunch of other people. Is, you know, it's like, because their reactions like become infectious, don't they? And it sort of, you know, it enhances the emotion of it.
Definitely,
I think.
It's a flavor enhancer for sure. It makes it way more scary, and then it makes you jump too. And then you might yell because the guy next to you is yelling like an idiot. Hey, you know what? You need to know about that movie, and this is probably why you liked it as much as you did. Is it has the main character from Jumanji. That kid with the brown hair.
Oh, really?
He was the main character in Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Okay.
So no wonder you liked Hereditary so much, because it contained one of the best characters from the best movies of the year.
All right. Well, I'm going to go see it now then, just because of that.
You haven't seen Jumanji yet?
No.
Oh, we got to stop the recording right now, Lewis. That's it. We got to wrap this up so Leander can go see Jumanji before he heads off to Spain, because it's by far the best movie.
I'll watch it tonight. I think it's free on, Xfinity.
Free?
I think so.
That's it? Now you have no excuse. Okay, speaking of wrapping up, let's go ahead and wrap it up here. We've been going for like 2 hours. Most people who are listening don't know. We've had to restart the recording like five times because Buster's recording in a library, and I have to pee so bad I'm about to injure my bladder. So let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. I want to wish everyone a very happy holidays. Hey, if you want to come spread some Christmas cheer to us, we're all on Twitter. I'm at Airfon. Leander is at L. Kenny. Lewis is at Lewis Walsh. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Oh, my gosh. Look at Santa, guys. He's back. Next time! Oh, that Airfon Elijah is so handsome, and he's been a very good boy. Thank you, Santa. We'll see you at Christmas time. What a guy. What a guy. Buster, can you hear him?
Yep.
Fantastic. Buster's joining us from Helm's Deep, so there's going to be a little bit of an echo.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a huge echo. Where's Helm's Deep?
It's in the mythical land of Middle Earth.
Oh, okay. real place, Helm's Deep, Arizona.
There probably is a Helm's Deep, Arizona. Actually, that sounds like a cool place to live, doesn't it?
Sounds like kind of place that Busta would be.
It sounds like a great place to drink, too, like a great pub. Helms Deep, you just go there and just drink all night.
Yeah, deep into your...
deep slumber. And then you put your head deep into the toilet as you're yakking. And the entire place, like all the waiters and waitresses are all dwarves. That sounds like an amazing place.
Sounds like a Renaissance fair.
Is that what Renaissance fairs are? Jeez.
I don't know. I've never been to one. I always want to go, actually.
They have one outside of Phoenix every year. Like, that's pretty popular.
Oh, yeah.
Is
that would be a great place
to
have
it. Dressed up in a suit of armor?
Not from, like, February to March. That's when it is.
Not for Buster.
Have you been?
No, I've never been, but I've had friends that have gone, and they say it's kind of cool, but there's no way that's true.
Sounds amazing. Sounds incredible.
Did you see that? There's some GIF or something that goes around the internet of this guy at a Renaissance fair chucking a spear at a drone and bringing it out of the sky.
That's incredible. Was he actually trying to hit it?
Yeah. And it's from the drone's point of
view.
That's
unbelievable.
Right? So it's going over the fair, and then suddenly you see this guy like sort of step out of this crowd with a spear, and it comes flying up, and then bang! Next thing you know, it's knocked it out of the sky.
Yeah, I heard that guy was in jail because the spear kept going and landed in somebody's chest. Oh,
they look kind of...
Huh?
Yeah, go on.
I was just going to take that joke and just keep going with it. You know, it just gets funnier and funnier.
What? Do you ever go to Dickens fairs? They have a Dickens fair here every year.
No. I'm sorry, that doesn't sound like something I'd be into. It doesn't sound like my scene.
Quoting Charles Dickens?
Yeah, well, they get all dressed up, right, and it's all sort of Victorian London without the cholera.
Oh,
without the cholera.
They have group diarrhea in the field. Recreate the era.
Right.
Everyone drink this Visine.
Visine? What, isn't that an eye thing?
Did you ever see Wedding Crashers?
No.
There's this scene where they're trying to make the boyfriend have diarrhea so that this guy can hit on his girlfriend. And they put Visine in his drink because apparently it gives you diarrhea.
Really?
Why? I don't know if
it's like
true.
A detergent?
No, Visine are eye drops. I think they're...
Yeah. But I wonder why it gives you diarrhea.
Yeah. I don't know if it actually gives you diarrhea. I was just saying in the movie that's what happens. Don't try it. Don't try this at home. Although if you have an enemy, like someone at 95 Max shows up at your party, it's a great way to get them to leave.
Yeah, right. For sure.
Or end up in your bathroom all night.